Tom Hartmann Show is next on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Elizabeth Hess. Accused serial bomber Eric Robert Rudolph is being held in a Birmingham, Alabama jail, and he has a court appearance scheduled for today. Officer Jeffrey Postel with the Murphy Police Department in North Carolina was the officer that first spotted Rudolph behind a shopping center this past weekend. He said he thought Rudolph was preparing to rob the place.
I handled the situation, you know, at a distance until I had backup there. And he complied to all my commands that I gave him. And he was very cooperative and very polite, never disrespectful.
Rudolph's first trial is expected to be in connection with the January 1998 bombing of a Birmingham abortion clinic. President Bush says Israel must deal with Jewish settlements as part of the Mideast roadmap to peace. Bush made the comments as he met with Arab leaders in Egypt. He also put pressure on the new Palestinian leadership to crack down on extremists.
We must not allow a few terrorists to destroy the dreams and hopes of the many.
The new roadmap calls for security arrangements and a creation of a Palestinian state by 2005. Protests surrounding the G8 summit have again turned ugly. A British man is in the hospital with multiple fractures after plunging more than 20 yards from a bridge in Lausanne, Switzerland, into shallow waters below. Christina, who was among the protesters, said a police officer cut a rope to which 39-year-old Martin Shaw was clinging to as a protest banner was being strung across the bridge.
At some point, a police officer just took a knife and cut the rope. So one my colleagues fell down of 25 meters height, and I was still hanging on the other side, but because the long end of the rope was on my side.
Hospital officials say Shaw's injuries were not life-threatening, and he could be released in a few days. A lawyer for Scott Peterson says the California District Attorney's Office should be removed from the case. In court papers filed yesterday, Mark Garrigo said the DA's office willfully violated Peterson's rights by listening in on phone conversations he had with his other attorney. Garrigos also said evidence gathered in those intercepted phone calls should not be allowed.
Hey, we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello. Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No. I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Let's read this one.
My favorite.
You want me to read a bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
More details are emerging about the Queens, New York car crash early yesterday that killed four and left two others brain dead. Lisa Romanello reports.
At least one of the four killed in the crash apparently was worried about getting into the car. A friend of Dione Richiez tells the Daily News he called her on a cell phone and said the people with him were, quote, drinking and going crazy. The cell phone call was cut off as the car careened into the median and a tree. Police say it was traveling at more than 100 miles an hour when it crashed and exploded. Lisa Romanello, New York.
What's the one key ingredient missing from the relief of allergies that hurt? The pain reliever in Advil. Yes, Advil. New Advil Allergy Sinus is a one-of-a-kind formula that takes the pain out of allergies in a whole new way. A recent study showed that when Advil is combined with its allergy medicine, you get better relief of your worst allergy symptoms, all with less of the medicine that makes you drowsy. Advance to new Advil Allergy Sinus and stop allergies that hurt.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair is under mounting pressure to hold an inquiry into the evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which was presented by intelligence agencies. Suzanne Chislett reports the call comes as the United States Congress announces it will conduct a similar inquiry.
Tony Blair returned from the G8 summit to growing calls for a full inquiry into the government's claims about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. With inspectors in the country so far reporting no fines, 50 members of parliament have signed a motion calling on the Prime Minister to publish all the evidence he saw before committing British troops to war in Iraq. Tony Blair has insisted proof of chemical and biological weapons will be found, but the move in the US to investigate intelligence claims and sources there will only add to the pressure the British leader is under. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Lawyers for accused September 11th co-conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui are due in federal appeals court today in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Elizabeth Hess with IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Does your car sound like the Clydesdales in Fast Forward? The problem could be unhealthy joints. No, not the horses, your cars. When we come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. That clacking could be a sign of old age in your car's CV or constant velocity joints. These flexible joints allow drive shafts and axles to steer cars smoothly. But if they don't function properly, axles could freeze up or even fall off. How do you recognize faulty CV joints? Popping and clicking when turning and clunking when accelerating are classic signs. And if you can create these noises by putting your car in reverse and backing in a circle, your CV joints are really aching. So communicate these symptoms to your technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Program today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on Sirius Channel 145, the Sirius satellite, which is now standard equipment in Chrysler, Ford, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, and Infiniti and Jaguar cars. And broadcasting live on the internet at ieamericaradio.com and radiopower.org. Welcome to our program today. If you're in the chat room, we've got a few folks in the chat room. If you go to tomhartman.com and click on the radio show link, you will find a link that points to our chat room. And we're using the chat room over the IE America radio site today. We were using it yesterday and today, and we're experimenting with it. It crashes from time to time. You just push the refresh button. It'll bring it back up. I think tomorrow we're going to move back to the CompuServe chat room. It seemed a little more robust. But anyhow, that's how to get there, and there's already a bunch of folks in there talking. We have some interesting emails we'll get to a little later on in the hour. And the topic for this hour, broadly, is how can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines? Our quote for the day is from Thomas Paine. He said, "The right of voting for representatives is the primary right by which all other rights are protected. To take away this right is to reduce a man to slavery." So what is happening in the area of voting and voting rights? Well, first of all, we've learned just in the last year or so, this has really come out. It certainly didn't come out right after the 2000 election, that the way that George Bush had won the election was in Florida was that Catherine Harris, his Secretary of State, who was also the head of the Florida campaign for the George W. Bush committee, committee to elect George W. Bush, that Catherine Harris had contracted with a private corporation to take the list of felons in the state of Texas and compare that list on a loose basis with the list of voters in the state of Florida. And the loose basis meant that somebody named John Johnson would match with Johnny J. Johnson or J.C. Johnson. And what this did was it disproportionately fell on black voters in Florida. thousands of them, perhaps as many as 10,000, perhaps as many as 70,000, certainly well over 10,000 black voters in Florida were bumped off the voting rolls. And as a result of being knocked off the voting rolls, of course, they showed up and they couldn't vote. I mean, they just couldn't do it. And as a consequence of that, the vote turned out the way it did, with Al Gore only winning by a few hundred votes when the final count was tabulated in October of 2001, right after 9/11. And that final count was finally tabulated by the news media. So there was that concern, and out of that came this law, the HAVA law, the HAVA law, the Help America Vote Act, which designated several billions of dollars, 30 or so billion dollars, to the states to purchase voting equipment. Now, keep in mind that as the election in Florida had been hijacked by Catherine Harris using this corporation, I mean, prior to this time, the state of Florida had never spent even a quarter of $1 million on purging voting rolls. It had never been done. And they contracted with this company and spent millions of dollars to have this company do this loose comparison between the voter rolls in Florida and the voter rolls in Texas. What made this possible? This couldn't have been done in a lot of states. It couldn't have been done, for example, here in Vermont, where I live, because there is no central voter list here in Vermont. It's maintained by each of the counties, by each of the voting districts. So what happened in Florida was, one of the first things was, they centralized their voter list. They compiled it all into one place. And then, not only did they centralize it, but they put it under the control of a political appointee, Catherine Harris, who was the head of the campaign for a politician who was running for election in that state. Now, that in and of itself caused a lot of people to say, wait a minute, this is, if not criminal, at least immoral, at least contradictory to the principles of democracy. This is wrong. This is not how things should be going on. So that happened as a consequence of that. Now, this, but as they were, as the stories were starting to leak out about how so many blacks had been disenfranchised in Florida, and all these African Americans were coming forward and saying, oh, "Wait a minute, you know, I showed up at the polls and I wasn't allowed to vote, and I am not a felon." And I mean, there were substantial numbers of people, credible people, making these claims, and the several groups came in and said, "Wait a minute, we're not going to tolerate this." And so the Bush administration and the Jeb Bush administration was peddling and of course the federal one as well, were peddling as fast as they could to direct people's attention away from the theft of the vote for African Americans in Florida toward these, quote, dysfunctional, end quote, voting machines, that there was a problem of hanging chads and this and that and the other thing. And this then led to this legislation, this HAVA law, Help America Vote law, that made it possible for voting machines, that mandates states across the United States to buy these electronic voting machines from private corporations and put them in place. It was kind of the old magic trick of, you know, while you're doing something with your right hand, you make everybody look at your left hand. We were all looking at the hanging chads while what was happening was that African Americans were being disenfranchised. So now we have these voting machines all across the country. And now questions are being raised about these. David Dill is a professor of computer science at Stanford University and one of the most well-qualified people in America to answer our question for this hour, how can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines? Professor Dill has been aware of some of the potential problems with electronic voting for many years and finally acted at the beginning of this year by writing a resolution on electronic voting, which called for all voting systems to have a voter verifiable audit trail. This resolution has now been endorsed by hundreds of computer scientists in the U.S. and abroad, including many of the top experts on electronic voting and computer security. Dr. Dill, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm wondering, how can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines?
Well, that is a question that I haven't quite answered at this point. My possibly naive assumption is that by getting sufficient public awareness and sufficient communication with the people who are supposed to be representing us, that we can cause them to stop this before the problem balloons even further out of control.
Well, let's identify the problem to begin with. Share with our listeners your understanding of how this works and what the potential dangers are.
Well, let me start by clarifying my stance, I guess. You know, I'm looking at this as a technologist. So I'm a computer scientist. I really want to look at the facts as I can see them and try to stay out of the politics as much as I can, which is, of course, not completely avoidable in this situation. The problem, as I see it, is that in a well-run election based on some kind of paper-based system, the process is transparent. So people can see the ballots being put in ballot boxes. They can see the transportation of the ballots. You can have observers from different parties watching that process, the handling of the ballots, and the counting of the ballots. The advantage of that is that the losers in an election can satisfy themselves that they lost fair and square instead of believing that the election is stolen. And with these electronic machines, there's a crucial part of the process that's not observable. That's between the voter's finger when the ballot is cast on the touchscreen and when the ballot is recorded inside the machine. You can't tell if you vote for George Bush whether your vote is being recorded for Al Gore inside the machine. And, in fact, there's nobody who can really know that that vote is properly recorded. After the voter leaves the polling place, since we have anonymous ballots, the information has been lost, and there's no way to go back and check that those votes were properly recorded. So we've got this invisible part of the process now.
Yeah. Why is it that they can't be? Is it because these machines are just basically computers, and it's like you push a key on a computer?
It's recorded on a disk or flash memory or something inside the machine. And so we can't see what's on that disk. We're relying on the computer. Suppose you make a record in some internal memory, and then it's displayed on the screen. That display is the process, is going through lots and lots of software. And if that software has been tampered with to display something different from what is recorded, there's no way the voter or anyone else can tell.
Right. We're speaking with Dr. David Dill of Stanford University, one of the leading computer scientists, computer science experts in the country, who has addressed this issue of computer voting machines, or the DRE. What does DRE stand for?
Direct Recording Electronic.
Right. Okay. And now, in the November 2002 election, the last election that was held, I was down in Florida just about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks after that election, doing a book signing. And in Miami, and I remember going back to my hotel room and turning on the TV, and there was this guy who was on TV who was saying, you know, I went into the polling place and I pushed the button I forget the name of the guy who was running against Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush was up for re-election in 2002, and this was the Democrat who was running against him.
Right.
You know, we'll call him Joe Blow because I can't remember his name. He says, hey, no, I went into the ballot and I pushed the button for Joe Blow, and the screen said, thank you for voting for Jeb Bush. So I pushed Joe Blow again, and it says, thank you for voting for Jeb Bush. And I pushed Joe Blow again, and it says, thank you. And he says, I did this 9 times before finally it said, thanks for voting for Joe Blow. And
well,
that's not
the problem I'm worried about, because at least the screen told him what vote was being recorded. What I'm worried about is, it says, thank you for voting for Joe Blow, but vote for Jeb Bush is recorded inside the machine. What I'm worried about is elections that appear to go perfectly smoothly, except that the wrong person gets elected, and nobody can detect that fact. This is probably a problem with misalignment of the, I guess, touch screens can get miscalibrated.
The company came out and said that the problem was a misalignment problem, that where the Joe Blow button was positioned was actually on top of the live area for Jeb Bush. And so if people pushed the Joe Blow button, it was recorded as a Jeb Bush vote. And when somebody sued them and said that they wanted to look at the software, and this was in Palm Beach, and the local judge in Palm Beach denied the petition, citing the privacy rights of the corporation that wrote the program.
That's my understanding.
Sense?
I think that the expert involved in that was Rebecca Mercury, who has been involved in this issue a lot longer than I have, since I just started in January of this year. Uh-huh. And she asked to see the software. I think she was allowed to watch somebody test the machine or something like that, but she really couldn't get access to the information they would need to check tampering. Now, I'm mentioning that, you know, any kind of tampering or subtle error like that might be very, very difficult to detect in the software, even if you could inspect it
Dr. Dill, we're coming up against a break here. I'm sorry, that music means that the break is coming and we can't stop it. But if you want to hang on, if you would hold on for just a moment, please, we'll continue in about 4 minutes here. And if you who are listening would like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 825-5937. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities, call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now, 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now, 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Machine. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on the IE America Radio Network from coast to coast and from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite. We're talking with Dr. David Dill, a professor of computer science at Stanford University, about voting machines. How can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines? We have on the line Nadine in Jacksonville, Alabama, Jeff in Denver, Colorado, Mike in Los Alamos, and Mac in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Quite a few calls here, so we're going to get to these. First, Nadine in Jacksonville, you have a question for Dr. Dill.
Yeah, Tom, I actually have a what I think might be a feasible solution. My husband worked for the Broward County Board of Elections during the 2000 election, and to say that it was a fiasco is putting it mildly.
I can imagine.
People were being turned away in droves. But
really?
Yeah, including me. But what I want to bring up is if we do it by computer, as the professor said, it disappears. There's no accountability. What about if once that button is printed, a paper ballot is also printed? And then that's literally dropped in the ballot box, and then if there's any problems, we go back to the paper ballots.
Brilliant, Nadine. I think that you know, great minds think alike. I think this is exactly what Dr. Dill has been proposing. Nadine, thank you for the call and the comment. I appreciate your calling in. Dr. Dill, your thoughts on that?
I'm not proposing a particular solution. I just want there to be some way for the voter to check that their vote was recorded properly. What Nadine is suggesting is actually one of the most promising options available, and there are already a couple of companies who are either selling or have produced equipment with this capability. There's a company called Avanti that's a small company that I know is certified in California, and they've been trying to sell machines with these printers where the voter can check the ballot. Largest vendors, ES&S, has recently come out with a machine that they're actively trying to sell as well.
Right. Now, Dr. Dill, if a receipt or a ballot is printed by the machine, is that ballot then easily scanned by other machines later if there's going to be a recount, or would it have to be hand-counted? I mean, are they designed in a way that can be easily counted?
That depends. The ES&S one, ES&S has optical scanners that are used for the absentee ballots anyway, and they have promised to modify that so it can read the printed ballots from their machines.
Right, right.
I believe the Avanti system has to be, if you need to do a recount, it has to be done by hand. In any event, you at least need to do some hand recounts regardless if there's a computer involved in any part of the process, in my opinion, because, you know, anytime there's a computer, there can be complicated software that could have errors or could be tampered with.
Right.
But you don't have to do hand recounts all the time. The advantage of optical scanning is that a candidate who wants a recount can get it a lot cheaper if he has to pay for it.
Right. Okay. Jeff from Denver, Colorado has a question or a comment for Dr. Dill, and welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Jeff, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi. You've touched on a project that's really dear to my heart. I've been working on this for the past couple of years myself. I'm a programmer.
Uh-huh.
And most of the programming of this is very easy to do a voting system. And I'd like to see what Dr. Dill would have to say. What I'd like to see is this whole thing of that, you know, voting is, as Thomas Paine said, you know, is such a fundamental aspect of for protecting liberty, that I believe we should have open source voting software, that thus the code is open to everyone. You know, of course, all the features such as printing a receipt and so forth, possibly even broadcasting the vote to several sources when, you know, encoded vote, which is then later on interpreted. So many sources have the information. But in particular, I'd love to see an open source voting. I'd love to see what he'd have to say about that.
Okay, great. Jeff, thank you for the call. I appreciate your calling in. Dr. Dill, we have only about, 30 seconds left that music means that we are coming up on a break right now. Dr. Dill, if you can hold on through this break, it'll be about 2 minutes, and then we'll get to the answer to that. I'm also concerned about, you know, will corporations be able to exist in that kind of an environment? We'll get back to that in just a minute. Stay with us. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
It's another Black Tuesday in France as much of the country's commerce and education grinds to a halt for the second time in less than a month. Widespread strikes began today. Air traffic controllers, dock workers, train and bus drivers, teachers, journalists, utility workers, and some government employees have taken to the streets again as France's National Assembly begins debate on reforms to the country's public pension system, which would extend the retirement age. The government made a last-ditch effort Monday to stave off the strikes by agreeing to delay implementation of the reforms until the fall, but the protesting unions say the proposal must either be scrapped or the labor unrest will continue.
A pair of proposed changes to the Fair Labor Standards Act have labor organizations wondering if the 40-hour work week is about to become a thing of the past. Under pressure from the Bush administration, the Labor Department may soon reclassify millions of American workers as exempt from overtime pay. Meanwhile, a bill before the House of Representatives this week would allow employers to substitute time and a half pay with paid vacations, compensation which would come as many as 13 months after an employee works an overtime shift.
One of the purposes that premium pay for overtime serves is to encourage employers not to make people work overtime.
David Cohen is an assistant to the president of the Department of Professional Employees. He says changes to the country's 60-year-old overtime rules could spell the end of the five-day work week.
Politicians who talk about family values need to leave people a little time with their families to transmit those values.
The House votes on changes to overtime laws this Thursday. Meanwhile, the Labor Department will close a public comment period at the end of June and could roll back overtime eligibility by the end of the summer.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
I want peace. You want peace.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Dr. David Dill here on day 76 of the Weapons of Mass Destruction search. And just to repeat something, we ran an ad for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom in the last break, one of the sponsors of the show. That phone number for them, if you want their information on corporate power, is area code 215-563-7110. Our question for this hour, how can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines? And Dr. Dill, in the last, just before the break, we had a call, Jeff in Denver, who is a computer programmer, who suggested that computer code in the voting machines should be open sourced, which means that nobody owns it, that it's not proprietary. And I'm wondering how corporations in the voting machine business could make a profit if they didn't control the source code. And then we've got a call. We've got to get to Mike in Los Alamos here. Dr. Dill, first, your answer to that question.
Let me comment first on the use of open source here. I'm a big fan of open source software. I'm a big Linux user, and I produced open source software. I think it's a desirable thing in the voting area, but I don't think it's going to solve the problem because, for technical reasons, it's practically impossible to make sure that the code you examine, that open source code, is the code that's actually running on the machines.
Plus, it doesn't rule out the possibility of a broken machine.
That's right.
Some mechanical problem.
You know, there's always a question of how carefully people inspect the open source. But the big problem is really that the code executing on the machine might not correspond to the open source. I do think it's a good idea. The companies are not enthusiastic about it. Hypothetically, I think a company could make money on it because I don't think the software is actually that big a deal except for the certification process that it has to go through on these things. I think that the hardware, the support, and the marketing of the companies is where a lot of their value comes from. So I believe that if there were an open source system, there could be companies that manufactured the machines it runs on, sold them to the election offices, and helped, you know, maintain them during the election.
Yeah.
Regardless of all of this, you still need some kind of voter verifiable audit trail.
Right.
Because you can't tell what's running on the machine.
Yeah. I spoke with one of the elections officials here in Vermont who indicated that the in her understanding was that the voting machines cost well over $10,000. She didn't know how many dollars, but some substantial amount of money, which seems like a fairly high cost for basically a fancy computer. But
it depends on the machine. Well, these touchscreen machines tend to be $3,000.
Yeah, okay. Mike from Los Alamos, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thank you for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Good morning.
Hey,
there?
Mike. Yeah, we still are.
Okay. Good morning.
Thank you for hanging on.
Call. And I thank Dr. Dell for working on this problem. It seems like an extremely serious problem to me, and I've been voting for 30 years, and verifiable voters, it means a paper trail is what you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, hear you just fine.
You need a verifiable paper trail, and that's how we vote in Los Alamos County. You mark your ballot with a line in between. You put a black mark in the line in between two arrows, and you slide that in the machine, and it counts it that way. And then if there's any question, they actually have a piece of paper they can go back and look at. And
right.
So that counts it in the precinct, right? You put it in the machine when you vote.
After you finish. After you finish marking the ballot, you slide it into, I guess it's an optical scanner.
Yeah, right. This is a good system. That's also the system I use when I vote in San Mateo County. There have been a lot of studies of voting errors, and these optical scan systems are pretty much as good as any for catching voter errors and, you know, basically giving you good trouble-free elections. And they do have a paper trail, as you point out.
It's got to have a paper trail. I would never trust that I just voted on a computer and it took an electronic signal and turned it into my vote. I find that completely outrageous.
So one question I don't have a clear answer to among computer scientists is whether it is possible to do with hardware that could be checked somehow, whether it would be possible to make an all-electronic voting machine without a paper trail.
I would completely disagree with that because that takes away from the individual any control over what they're doing. Everybody or almost everybody can understand a paper ballot and the marking between the two lines.
Uh-huh.
They can understand a computer. And that data or information can be manipulated by the person with knowledge, and that person controls your vote.
Yeah, I think that's quite a reasonable argument. You do want a system that can be understood by almost every voter, and that's one of the advantages of the paper-based systems we have now.
Yeah,
I'm open-minded about it, but you have a reasonable point.
Well, thank you for working on that, and I hope that you all decide to come up with something that has paper left over afterwards. You can recycle it later if that's a concern. But
thank you, Mike, for... Yeah, thank you, Mike, for dropping by our radio home here on the IE America Radio Network on the Tom Hartman program, where we're talking with Dr. David Dill of Stanford University, a computer science professor, and we're asking the question, how can we make sure that our vote is real? How can we prevent democracy from being hijacked? Thomas Paine made the comment, the right of voting for representatives is the primary right by which all other rights are protected. To take away this right is to reduce a man to slavery. Dr. Dill, in Nebraska, the state where some would say a lot of this started, with Chuck Hagel being recruited from the first Bush administration to come out to Nebraska and head up a voting machine company. And then after that, voting machine company's voting machines were distributed all over the state. He ran for U.S. Senate and defeated, in an upset election, defeated a very popular incumbent Democratic governor, and is still the United States Senator, and he no longer runs the voting machine company. But that state, talking with Charlie Matulka, the guy that Hagel beat in the last election, that state has passed a law that makes it against the law for people working in the precincts to examine paper ballots. Is this a trend that's happening around the country?
I don't really know. Let me make a couple of comments.
Sure.
I think that upset with Hagel was on machines that had a voter verifiable paper trail. It was the optical scan system, possibly the very one we were just talking about with a previous caller. So there are paper ballots there that could be hand recounted. I don't know that anything untoward has happened in Nebraska. I haven't really investigated it. I did look up some newspaper stories about the original Hagel upset, and it seemed that there wasn't a great deal of suspicion in the state of Nebraska about it.
I'm not suggesting that he stole the election. My point is that sometimes the appearance of impropriety is even more destructive
to
democratic
exactly
processes
right,
than impropriety itself.
You know, you need a trusted election system. Even if all of these electronic machines work perfectly, the fact that people can't prove that they work perfectly is enough to undermine our voting system, I think.
Right.
So about looking whether it's legal to examine the paper ballots, I don't know exactly what that Nebraska law is. One thing about having a paper trail is it doesn't help you. Having an audit trail doesn't help you unless you do audits occasionally. And so in many states in this country, it is too hard to get a manual recount. And that is a situation that needs to be fixed. It's not going to help to have all these paper trails if people can't look at them. California is a good state. It's not hard to get a recount here, and there are machine failures where, by manually recounting the ballots, they're able to recover when they have a paper trail. There was an egregious case in Alabama where there was the incumbent governor thought he won when he went to bed, and then when he woke up, found out he had lost because there was a change in the vote count in one county. And
right.
The paper ballots were never counted there, even though there was some sort of obvious machine problem. That seems to me bordering on the deranged.
Yeah, the guy who beat him was the Republican, and as I recall, and the Democrats just backed down on that.
I talked to somebody in Alabama who had looked into that a little more carefully. So the political situation was that the incumbent who lost the election and was challenging it, wanted a statewide recount. That seems silly because, in fact, the problem was localized at one county.
Right.
He was not allowed. The reason he did that was he was being accused of acting like Al Gore recount. And then the judiciary is apparently largely Republican there. But it sounds like maybe refusing a statewide recount is even reasonable in that situation. But something should have been recounted.
Yeah, and that's also an issue. You know, Gore only asked for a recount in certain counties in Florida, and had that, I mean, this was why the New York Times later said that if Gore had gotten the recount he wanted, he would have still lost. If they just looked at the counties that Gore had asked for, Gore would have lost the election. But when they counted the votes all across the state, Gore would have won the election.
It's possible to learn the wrong lessons from Florida. So if you have a county where there's one broken voting machine and it's producing obviously bogus results, the right thing to do is go recount that, you know, the ballots associated with that one machine, and don't worry about the rest of the state, I think. That wasn't the situation in Florida, but I think it was the situation in Alabama.
Yeah, I think in Florida that Gore had not realized that what had happened was that there had been a statewide systematic theft of votes, a huge disenfranchisement of African Americans and other people whose names were similar to Texas felons, and that he thought that it was a fraud confined to a couple of counties. It was a tough one. Anyway, Dr. David Dill with Stanford University, I thank you very much for being on our program today. I appreciate your being available for us to call you. One last question. Do you have any suggestions for websites or places where people can get more information?
Remembering to make a plug for my website. I've got one which has more information on it for people who want to dig deeper.
Great.
www.verifiedvoting.org.
And verified voting is one word. There's no hyphen or anything.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm putting updates there as I can do. I'm, not able to do as much as I'd like to because I do have a real job and whatever, but I'm trying to keep people up to date on that website and also be a place where people can get involved and meet other people who want to be involved in the process.
Great. And what's your biggest hope for the future here with regard to this?
Well, I would like to see us having a voting system that we could trust. What I'm really worried about is that there are going to be so many of these touchscreen machines purchased in the next 2 years that at the end of that interval, more than half of our voters will be voting on them. And I would like to see the tide turned and see us moving towards a more accountable system with a voter verifiable audit trail over the next few years.
Well said. Good. Thank you, Dr. Dill. Thank you very much for the effort you're putting in to help reclaim democracy and maintain a healthy and clean voting system here in the United States. I very much appreciate your being on the program today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. In the next hour, by the way, just so you all know, we're going to have Scott Ritter on. We're going to talk about his adventures in Iraq and adventures since then. It'll be a fascinating show. But right now, I want to finish up this conversation about the vote and voting machines and all this sort of thing. This is a problem that has multiple dimensions. Representative Rush Holt of New Jersey, and I'm not sure if this guy's a Democrat or Republican, has just introduced a law. It's called the Voter Confidence and Increased Accessibility Act of 2003. And this is sort of an update to the HAVA Act, to the Help America Vote Act, which was pushed through by the Republicans after the 2000 mess in Florida, where they said, oh, it's all the problem is just bad voting machines or hanging chads or whatever, and we'll solve this problem by installing these machines. So Representative Rush Holt, he says, this is a quote from him, and it's a really interesting one. He says, "We cannot afford, nor can we permit, another major assault on the integrity of the American electoral process. Imagine it's Election Day 2004. You enter your local polling place and go to cast your vote on a brand new touchscreen voting machine. The screen says your vote has been counted. As you exit the voting booth, however, you begin to wonder, how do I know if the machine actually recorded my vote? The fact is," says Professor Rush Holt, Representative Rush Holt of New Jersey, "the fact is, you don't know." And so he's suggesting legislation that would explicitly require that voting machines have generate a paper ballot that can be verified. And there's also this is from, I think, Dr. David Dill's website, the fellow we were just talking to, the resolution on electronic voting that would require that the voting machines provide a voter verifiable audit trail, and that should be one of the essential requirements for certification of new voter systems. Now, other considerations, other concerns about the HAVA Act. This is just today, Deborah Markowitz, who's the Secretary of State here in Vermont, passed somebody in the chat room has said that Representative Rush Holt is a Democrat. Thank you for passing that information along. Deborah Markowitz is our Secretary of State here in Vermont, and she published an op-ed piece in today's Burlington Free Press. Voter Act has benefits and challenges, and she raises two things that I didn't know about. She said, first of all, the most controversial provision of HAVA is the requirement that people who register to vote must provide their driver's license number or, if they have none, the last four digits of their Social Security number. The law contemplates that these numbers will help prevent voter fraud by permitting election administrators to determine whether a voter is registered and voting in more than one place. When these provisions go into effect, Deborah Markowitz, Secretary of State of Vermont, says, a person who registers to vote but fails to provide these numbers will not be added to the voter checklist. She goes on to say, this is troublesome because the federal requirements might be too restrictive under Vermont constitutional law. But she says there's a bigger question that many people are raising as a result of this. And she said, is this bringing us one step closer to a national identification system that would permit the government to track us in our daily lives? Quote unquote from the Secretary of State of the State of Vermont, Deborah Markowitz. And that's an interesting question. I think another large issue here that I want to very clearly sensitize you to in this issue of how can we prevent democracy from being hijacked by corporations controlling voting machines is the corporate right to control a voting machine. This goes back to that 1886, that bizarre 1886 Supreme Court ruling. I wrote a book about this called Unequal Protection. In that, the subtitle is The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. And in that court ruling, the Supreme Court did not say that corporations are persons and have access to the Bill of Rights and the rights of persons, but the reporter of the court, John Chandler Bancroft Davis, did say that. And this got written into the record as a commentary on the case, not the case itself. But Supreme Courts ever since then have pointed back to that commentary and said, corporations have these rights of persons, therefore they have privacy rights. And you have the situation like in Florida, where in Palm Beach, when this person sued and wanted to look at the source code, they were told, no, you can't look at that source code. The corporation has a right of privacy. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of the transnational corporation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells 1-800-BUY-COIN. That's BUYCOIN. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for
oh,
everybody.
God, help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.
Peter
Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I love leaves in the wind, pictures of my friends, birds of the world, and squirrels. I love coffee in a cup, little fuzzy pups, old TV shows, and snow.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. In our email collection, actually this is from our message board. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on the link to the radio show, you will find over on the left-hand side there's a link to our chat room, which is full and active right now. Some interesting conversations going on in there. And also you'll find a link to the message board, which has got about 20,000 messages posted on it right now, where you can join and post messages. And Klaus in Eugene, Oregon says, who will step up to the plate to slow our slide into national debt oblivion? And Sawdust in Florida responds, he says, Klaus, it won't be the Republicans and it won't be the Democrats. Both parties want to buy themselves into power with the American people. Until someone has the courage to put a stop on government giveaways and end runaway spending, the debt will grow and grow. And then Klaus and Eugene also in another thread, he said, enlightened interdependence. This is a potential catchphrase that could prove quite useful in uniting the Greens and the Democrats, which I thought was an interesting comment. And then in another thread about the campaign finance reform, where's the reform is the topic. Timber Monkey in Durham, North Carolina says, did McCain-Feingold change nothing? I hear reports that the Bush campaign hopes to spend at least $175 million, maybe as much as $250 million on the 2004 campaign. And the Dems are going around to big business with a tin cup, too. As long as this kind of institutionalized bribery continues, we'll continue to get the same kind of candidates. And then Tricia B. in Ohio replies, she says, political reform are two oppositional words that should never be used together in the same sentence, political and reform. Well said, Patricia, unfortunately. She says, she goes on to say, but it is a great illusion to appease the peasants into submission for a time. And then Smile Guy replies, he says, what would people think about the idea of banning corporate sponsorship and restricting political spending so all parties get the same chance to share their views? Now, interestingly, Teddy Roosevelt had the same idea. In 1906, on December 3rd, 1906, Teddy Roosevelt said, I again recommend a law prohibiting all corporations from contributing to the campaign expenses of any party. Let individuals contribute as they desire, but let us prohibit in effective fashion all corporations from making contributions for any political purpose, directly or indirectly. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Elizabeth Hess. Secretary of State Colin Powell calls this an important moment in Middle East history.
All this means is that there is hopeful change in the region. Iraqi liberation, Palestinians building institutions that will be responsive to their people, rejecting terror, seeking support from their neighbors, and as you saw today, receiving support and expressions of further support.
Powell is with President Bush in Egypt for meetings with Arab leaders on Mideast peace. Baltimore City school officials are trying to figure out who illegally tapped into the school system's computer system. The hacker got into the system that stores information about school employees and the hours they've worked. School leaders believe this wasn't a random act and are conducting a forensic investigation. Dr. Tyrone Powers of Children First tells ABC2 News that he isn't surprised.
It doesn't surprise me. I think that they began to work on this computer system some years ago. They put it on the back burner, dealing with some other issues and some other problems, and then it comes back to haunt. And when they knew really they should have dealt with it forthrightly in the first place.
Dr. Powers also says computer security and accountability have been lax for years because the school system has just put too much emphasis on the business of education instead of educating. Serial bomber suspect Eric Robert Rudolph will be in court in Birmingham, Alabama today to face charges in the bombing of an abortion clinic there in 1998. An off-duty policeman was killed in the blast. Rudolph, who was a fugitive for 5 years, will also be tried in Atlanta in connection with three bombings there, including the Olympic Park blast of 1998. A handwritten letter purportedly written by terrorist leader Osama bin Laden some 6 months ago has been found in the pocket of a suspected Saudi militant killed by police. According to a Saudi newspaper, the man was among a group of 19 people suspected of having ties to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. Phoenix's Catholic Bishop Thomas O'Brien has been given immunity from prosecution in the sex abuse scandal that has rocked the church. The deal removes his authority to deal with sex abuse cases in the diocese.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello. Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No. I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Let's read this one.
My favorite!
You want me to read her bedtime story? You have a bad headache. Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
President Bush and Egyptian leaders are giving a big push to the new roadmap for Mideast peace. The Egyptian leaders urged Palestinian Authority to fulfill its responsibility to end violence and maintain law and order. President Bush called this a moment of promise in the cause of peace in the Mideast.
We see the potential for unity against terror. We see the potential for the birth of a new and Palestinian state. We see the potential for broader peace among the peoples of this region.
President Bush also cited the potential for broader peace among all nations in the region.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad.
I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
The FCC narrowly approved new rules that allow television broadcasters to increase the number of stations they own and expand their reach into the newspaper business. FCC Chairman Michael Powell believes the updated rules are needed to reflect new sources of entertainment and news on cable and the Internet.
Most of our rules that are about broadcasting are dating back to the 40s in many instances, and for that medium to remain competitive and for those rules to make sense, it's long overdue that the Commission attempted to make them relevant in a multi-channel, 500-channel world.
The FCC agreed to permit local broadcasters to own two stations in most cities and also own a greater combination of newspapers, television, and radio stations. The head of the Phoenix Catholic Diocese has entered into an agreement with county prosecutors to avoid criminal charges. Bishop Thomas O'Brien has admitted covering up sexual abuse allegations among members of his clergy. Under the agreement, O'Brien will play a diminished role in dealing with sexual allegations against clergy. I'm Elizabeth Hess, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. When we come back, I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish. Not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to our program today, broadcasting live from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, channel 145, Sirius left, and broadcasting on the Internet on ieamericaradio.com and radiopower.org. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Our question today for this hour, on day 76... of the search for weapons of mass destruction, is, has this administration harmed our government by possibly lying about weapons of mass destruction? Today, I believe it was Paul Krugman wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times. If you haven't seen it at nytimes.com, or I'm sure commondreams.org and op-ed news and alternate and whatnot will have it, where he suggests that this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. Is this having an administration? Well, first of all, we have to separate the idea of administration and government. And this is why I phrased the question this way. Has this administration harmed our government by lying about weapons of mass destruction? Our government is something which exists independent of any administration. Our government came into being in the 1780s at the end of the Revolutionary War, survived the Civil War, survived two world wars, and still exists. The administration is just the elected officials who happen to be filling a role in that government. Now, over the years, over the centuries, various administrations have changed the nature of our government in various ways. Some would say to its detriment, others would say to its benefit. But the point is that the administration and the government are two different things. One of the classic strategies of demagogues and dictators around the world is to claim that they are the government. If you oppose the president of Burma in his policies, you can be put to death. Because according to him, it is the president of Burma is the government. We had interesting. I just got a cue from Shar here. We had Scott Ritter, who is going to be on the line, and she called, and he's a fireman, and he just got a fire call, and he has to go. Said he was sorry. Could you call in to reschedule? So we will have Scott Ritter on another show a little later on. Unfortunately, being a volunteer fireman, I guess, literally, a fire happens, off you go. So, has this administration harmed our government by lying about weapons of mass destruction? Paul Krugman says, not only has it harmed our government, but it has harmed our stature around the world, it has harmed our standing here in the United States. I'm curious what your thoughts are on about this. If you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. What about the preemptive strike doctrine? This is another aspect of the same thing. The United States, from its founding until this last year, has had the position, has just absolutely taken the position, that we declare wars when we are attacked. Now, we haven't always been fully honest about it. The Spanish-American War, Teddy Roosevelt, some say the Maine was engineered, the sinking of the Maine, as a pretext to go to war in the Philippines. There's also the Vietnam War, the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, where we had a ship in the Gulf of Tonkin, and it was... Apparently, you know, it blew up or whatever. The specifics of it escape me at the moment. But it was not attacked by the North Vietnamese, whether it was attacked at all. And yet, nonetheless, LBJ lied about that to Congress and got this essentially war powers or police powers to go into Vietnam and started that. So the concept has always been in the past, always, that we don't just go charging off. We and no nation does. No nation in the world has, with the exception of those that we have stopped, you know, as happened in Germany. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our number, and Philip in Palm Harbor, Florida is on the line. Philip, thank you for calling the Tom Hartman program. Welcome.
Hi. How many people out there old enough to remember the quote, secret plan to end the war?
In Nixon's secret plan.
Yeah, that he got
this
elected
was the
one,
on. Yeah,
secret plan. It was so
this.
Secret, he couldn't tell us before he got elected.
Right.
And then, of course, the plan was to escalate the war, escalate the bombing, invade Cambodia.
Right.
You know, I hate to say it, but I don't think people care. Unless you cheated on your wife and lied about it.
Yeah, Philip, you think that this is an old song? This is just a repeat, and you know, therefore, should we do? I mean, should we be upset? Should we be concerned about this?
Yeah, but you know, we're talking. You know, with all due respect, we're all preaching to the choir here.
Right.
I think everybody who listens to this show is very upset with this guy who's flirting with fascism. Mm. But the question is, what do we do? And I want to propose a suggestion.
Okay.
and something that no one's ever brought up before. You know, power comes through coalitions in terms of politics.
Yeah.
And one of the groups that's been on the front line going way back to Reagan, okay, not just talking about stuff, but put their lives on the line and have lost their lives,
mm-hmm.
opposing this kind of military adventurism, et cetera, believe it or not, it's the Catholic Church.
Hmm.
You had nuns and priests who were tortured and murdered in Nicaragua and El Salvador by the guerrillas that we financed and armed.
Yeah,
you've,
and
got four, you've got four nuns who are facing 8 years in federal prison, okay, for going up against a Minuteman missile site and, you know, allegedly damaging, you know, the perimeter fence.
Mm-hmm.
These people are out there.
Yeah.
These priests and nuns, they are suffering for their opposition to this type of institutionalized fascism. And we should be building bridges to the priests and the nuns who have been out there fighting, you know, the Bushes and the Reagans.
Yeah, Philip, I hear what you're saying, and let me just share a brief story of my take on this. Back about 5 years ago, I think it was, maybe 6 years ago, I had published a book called The Prophet's Way, and as a result of that, it's mostly about this guy who's now 86 years old in Germany, Gottfried Müller, who started these programs all around the world, and I've been working with him for 25 years. And a friend of his was the wife of a fellow who was the old best friend of the guy who's now the Pope, when they were kids together.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Dr. Juhar, Dr. Giuseppe Juhar, and his wife is Monica Juhar. And so Herr Müller sent I sent him a copy of the book after it was published, and he sent a copy of it to Monica. And she read it and said, "This is really great. This guy's written a great book. We ought to, you should get your friend to do something about this." And they put on, once a year, they put on this concert in Castel Gandolfo and Giuseppe has been working for years and trying to bring Catholics and Protestants together. And so they bring Catholics and Protestants together at this concert, and Giuseppe puts the thing together, and the Pope is always there. And so I knew nothing about all of this stuff, and I'm sitting here at home one day, and I get a fax in my fax machine that says you're invited to come for a private audience with His Holiness Pope John Paul II.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, you know, this has got to be a hoax, right? So anyhow, we called him up, and they said, yeah, you know, you're actually invited, and they told me the story about the book. And so Louise and I flew over to Italy. Huh. And flew into Rome and you know, spent a couple of days there, and then went up to Castel Gandolfo, which is the Pope's summer home. And we spent the afternoon with the Pope and a bunch of people at this concert, but then we were privately introduced to the Pope. And I got to tell you, I had such mixed feelings about this. I am not Catholic, so I didn't have whatever. I mean, the Catholics around me who were meeting him were literally falling down on the floor and kissing his ring and all this kind of stuff. But he sat in this giant throne behind this 12-foot statue, golden statue of St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clear to me that this was empire. This was absolutely empire. And that
the Vatican
was
the country.
It was an ancient and powerful empire. And later,
right,
the next day, we were back in Rome, and one of the people that we just ran into in the hotel, we were having lunch with these people, and this guy made the point that the Vatican is the only nation in the United Nations that has no women. There are no women who are citizens of the Vatican, and yet the Vatican sits on the Council of the United Nations that determines birth control policy for the UN. And
well, that's,
you know, so
okay, that's an issue that a lot of people are probably not going to be able to get together with on the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But consider the fact that this Pope opposed this war.
Yeah, I know.
This Pope sent an emissary to Iraq. This Pope sent an emissary to George Bush. This mm-hmm. Pope met with George Bush. This Pope did his everything possible to try to stop this war.
Oh, I agree.
Now, I want to know
that's the other half of my mixed feelings. You know, the one half was that this is empire. The other half was that he seemed to me like really a very extraordinary human being. Pardon my interrupting you. You still there, Philip?
Yes. Well, again, yeah. he's, you know, again, You know, when it comes to the issue of, you know, abortion and this kind of thing, you know, there's a lot of people on the left that are probably not going to get together with the church. But the reality is the church has been on the front line of trying to stop these kinds of wars. I don't know of any other – do you know of any other nation that sent emissaries and met with Bush to try to stop this war? I don't.
Yeah, not in a let's work this out way. I mean,
that's right. And he spent, I tell you, he spent a lot of political capital because a lot of Catholics are conservative, okay? And and he knew he stepped on a lot of toes by trying by opposing this war and stopping this war, but he didn't care.
Yeah,
okay?
No, I honor that.
And
I honor that he holds to his convictions, even the ones that I disagree with. I honor that. I respect that. I think your point, Philip, is really well taken, that we ought to reach out to these folks, and I thank you for calling in and joining us here on our radio home here on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. If you'd like to call and be on the program, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Stick around. We'll return in just a few minutes.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit, no credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, "At a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore"? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, "To people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
In case you thought Washington couldn't get one whit weirder, meet John Graham. He's been installed by George W. as the czar of federal regulations, and his unstated assignment is to weaken or kill any rule designed to protect your and my health and well-being if that rule is deemed by big corporations to be too strong, too inconvenient, or, worst of all, too effective. Graham is a notorious right-wing laissez-faire nutball who has made a career fronting for corporations that want to escape our nation's health, labor, environmental, and other laws. Through a corporate-funded outfit he calls the Harvard Institute of Risk Assessment, he has given raw corporate greed quasi-academic cover by issuing studies claiming that, say, an anti-pollution rule protecting people's health has to be balanced against a polluting corporation's need for profit. How nutty is this guy? Graham recently engineered a Bush change in America's environmental policy, decreeing that henceforth any regulation to limit pollution should consider the relative monetary value of people's lives based on their age. For example, instead of basing clean air enforcement on the assumption that all lives saved by clean air are worth the same, Graham wants to rig the rules so that older people's lives are discounted in value. He's even got a price tag for you. If you're under 70, you're worth $3.7 million. But if you're older than that, he knocks down your value to only $2.3 million. This new Bush policy has been dubbed the Senior Death Discount. And it is so unprincipled and nutty that the head of the EPA has publicly disowned it, saying EPA will not, I repeat not, use an age-adjusted analysis in decision-making. Graham, however, says that while the senior death discount will not be applied now, he still will push it as official Bush policy. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop this kook, check out the National Resources Defense Council, NRDC.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Decades of activism, Catholics and friends have always been at the forefront and the most dedicated. Occasionally, a lone Buddhist monk shows up. He goes on to say, I've met Herr Mueller. What a wonderful man. So this must be Adam, who's in our chat room, the fellow I met in Germany this spring, and he was there last fall. Adam's from Ohio, as I recall. Hey, Adam. Timber Monkey says, I didn't disagree. This is our chat room. That if you go to TomHartman.com and click on the link to the radio show page, it'll take you to a page where you can click on the chat room and drop in. Scott Ritter was going to be with us this hour. He is a volunteer fireman, and there was a fire. Oddly, just right after Char called, our board operator got him on the line, and boom, off goes the alarm, and off he goes. So we're going to have him on a little later on in the week or early next week. Timber Monkey then replies to Adam. He says, I didn't disagree with the abstract idea of removing Saddam Hussein from power. By the way, if you'd like to be on the program, the number is 1-800-825-5937. That's 1-800-TALK-YES. Timber Monkey says, I don't disagree with the abstract idea of removing Saddam Hussein from power, but I don't believe the goal was to free the Iraqi people. And the silence about other dictators who rule friendly nations is proof. Andy in Pennsylvania says, indeed, for every noble reason to topple Hussein, there are three ways those doing it are going to profit from it. And the person says, in these times, a good magazine, and on it goes. But what about this? Has the administration harmed our government by lying about weapons of mass destruction? We now have, on day 76 of the search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, we have captured or interrogated Iraq's deputy prime minister, the secretary general of the Republican Guard, the chief of staff for the Iraqi army, the minister of military industrialization. This would be the equivalent of their head of the military industrial complex, Saddam's science advisor, the guy who was the head of the National Monitoring Directorate. This is the guy who served as the liaison with the United Nations weapons inspectors. So if there are weapons anywhere, he would know about them, for no other reason than to misdirect people. And the Minister of Oil, who, news reports say, was believed to be in charge of the facilities that weaponized anthrax and other toxins. We have all of these people in custody. We are not holding them in the United States, where we have to respect their human rights in interrogation. They are being held in Iraq or in friendly countries in the Middle East, where things can be extracted. So you would think, with all these folks, that if there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, one of them would have said, yeah, I'll tell you where it is, just stop doing that. Whatever that is. Or how about we cut a deal? I'll tell you where the weapons are if you'll just, you know, give me a light jail sentence. All of them. The Deputy Prime Minister, the Secretary General of the Republican Guard, the Chief of Staff of the Army, the Minister of Military Industrialization, the Science Advisor, the head of the National Monitoring Directorate, the Minister of Oil, have all asserted absolutely that there are no weapons of mass destruction. Dan is in our chat room. He says, the question is not only if are they there, but in the first place, why would we drop bombs on large piles of weapons? That's a good question. Dan had mentioned that in a round-robin discussion we had. Why would we blow this stuff back in our own faces if we really believed it was there? Let's get into these questions. If you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Microscopic plants in Arctic lakes show signs of a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The remains of tiny plants at the bottom of lakes in northern Canada show a steady transition to species that are suited to warmer and warmer water. John Small says the remains of these plants are a clear sign that the northern latitudes have grown warmer over the past 200 years. Small is a biologist at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. He studied sediment samples from 50 lakes in Canada's Northwest Territories to find remains of plants called diatoms. Diatoms are a form of algae, and they use minerals in the water to encase themselves in something like a glass shell. The diatoms that were buried about 30 centimeters into the sediment date back about 200 years. Small says they typically were the kinds that are suited for colder climates. Diatoms closer to the surface sediments were those that live in warmer water. Small says the shift in this community of tiny plants could indicate bigger changes for the lakes themselves.
If the diatoms are changing, it means probably the entire ecosystem is changing. Some of these lakes quite possibly are getting warmer. It's possible that fish, for example, or other species that used to live farther south will be able to move into these lakes, and they'll totally start changing these systems after many thousands of years of being one type of system.
Small says the remains of these tiny plants are signs of larger changes in the global climate.
I think this is, again, is just adding more evidence that the climate is changing and it's related to, at least partially, to greenhouse gas emissions. We don't want to say all these changes are due to greenhouse warming, but I think the evidence is constantly piling in that we are seeing significant changes in climate.
Small says the Arctic is showing some of the earliest and strongest signs of global warming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Just give me something I can use. People love it when you lose. They love dirty
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Where is George Bush leading us? Has this administration harmed our government by lying about weapons of mass destruction? Gary Hart, an elder statesman in the United States, some would say he fell from grace, others still admire him. I think he's widely regarded, though, as, if nothing else, somebody who really understands both politics and American democracy. He wrote an article in today's Boston Globe. Or perhaps it was yesterday's, 6-2, that was yesterday. And he says, Bush administration officials convinced the president to go to war against Saddam Hussein. He says they, quote, had decided Saddam Hussein must go a full decade before 9/11. So the destruction of the World Trade Towers were simply a pretext to, or were, it was a convenient excuse, rather, to pursue a policy that had been in the making for a long time, that if you look at the documents for the Vision for a New America, what's it called? It's something close to that. And anyway, all of this transpired in the space of a few months, Gary Hart says, without congressional hearings or review. That is this change in American foreign policy. No comprehensive statement by the administration, no serious editorial discussion, no public debate over this new foreign policy. Hart says, throughout American history, major departures in foreign policy have been the occasion for lively, even contentious, debate. This has not been the case as the war on terrorism morphed into the centerpiece of a new imperial foreign policy. Consequences abound, Gary Hart says. For example, North Korea. What are we going to do now? We have said, hey, if a nation has nasty stuff, we're going to go after them. So North Korea says, okay, fine, you're going to come after us. We are going to lay the world a waste. They claim now that they have missiles that can reach the shores of the continental United States and that they are developing nuclear weapons. Are we going to pursue our preemptive policy there? And, Gary Hart says, if we can engage in preemptive wars, then why cannot India or Pakistan or a rather large number of other antagonists do the same thing? And if we're recalibrating the rules of the game, if we're saying that the rules that we agreed to when we ratified the United Nations Charter no longer count, where is that going to lead us? Gary Hart says, wipe out your enemy now on the grounds that he may someday represent a threat to you? And what about eradicating dictators who assault their own people? An argument used against Saddam. There's certainly plenty of those around. We've got Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe right now who is in the process of killing millions of his own citizens. We've got, in Burma, we've got an absolute tyrant. Look at China. They just put people in prison just last week for daring to question the government on an internet chat room. If the invasion of Iraq is simply the completion of Gulf War I, then perhaps deployment of special forces to the Philippines is the completion of the Spanish-American War, Gary Hart says. Who can tell? No one in Washington, including my own Democratic Party, seems to be asking any tough questions. This is a real challenge for us, I think, in America. This is a major departure in foreign policy from the historic foreign policy of the United States. And yet, as Hart points out, it's been done with no discussion, no debate. From the Monroe Doctrine up until today, major foreign policy shifts have been accompanied by huge debate. Editorial debate, debate among citizens, debate in Congress. No debate here. Just suddenly we say, we have the right to declare war against somebody because we think that they may represent a threat against us in the future. You can either believe much of the rest of the world. This is interesting. Gary Hart, he says, you can either believe much of the rest of the world became almost overnight obtuse and anti-American. I mean, remember, after 9/11, the whole world was with us. They were right there. They were like, yeah, we love you, America. We're, you know, if they hit us, they hit you too. If they hit you, they hit us too. All this kind of stuff. You can either believe much of the rest of the world became almost overnight obtuse and anti-American, or you can more plausibly believe that we unilaterally launched ourselves on a mission that made little sense to much of the rest of the world. Could it be that the rest of the world is that they're scratching their heads going, whoa, what is happening to this country that we knew? America is a republic, Gary Hart says. Throughout history, republics have never been compatible with empire. Read the Romans, among others. When republics began to seek hegemony and expand the reach and scope of their power, they no longer remain republics. America is too young and too noble for that. So what's going on over there in Iraq and Afghanistan? This is a story. I'm surprised. This was Kyoto News. This was in the Japanese news services. Why it wasn't picked up by American news services baffles me. You'll find it in several of the foreign news sources. In Islamabad, this came out. Afghan President Hamid Karzai, our guy that we put into Afghanistan, the former oil consultant who is now president of Afghanistan, has threatened to resign unless the Afghan government improves the situation, unless the situation in Afghanistan improves politically and economically within 3 months. The Pakistan-based news agency said Karzai used a religious ceremony on Sunday to express his dissatisfaction and dismay over the situation in the country after 18 months of U.S.-backed rule in Afghanistan. Speaking at a ceremony in Kabul marking the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad, Karzai said military and police personnel in 26 Afghan provinces have not received their salaries. And under present circumstances, it was difficult to maintain law and order in the country. So the president of Afghanistan has just given us 3 months' notice. What are we going to do about that? What can we do about it? Well, he's basically saying, hey, pay for the cops. Pay for the army. Keep your promises. And we're not responding. This is the fallout of this policy. Has our administration harmed our government? Has the credibility and stature of the United States and the future of this nation, which will extend long beyond the rule and reign of George W. Bush, has this administration harmed our nation, our government, by lying about weapons of mass destruction, whether those lies were intentional or accidental? Or will it be demonstrated that they didn't lie? Are we going to find something? I mean, it's only been 76 days. Although you would say, you know, Saddam probably had more incentive to hide his gold and his millions of dollars, which we have found, than he would to hide weapons of mass destruction. And they would probably have been easier to hide gold and billions of millions of dollars, adding up to over $1 billion. Yet we have found that. U.S. Senator Bob Graham, in yesterday's Miami Herald, accused the Bush administration of overzealous editing of the public version of the report on the causes of the 9/11 attacks. Now, why would they do this? Citing proposed changes in several sections of the report, which was based on the congressional investigations he helped oversee as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the Florida senator, now this is not the lunatic fringe, this isn't the extreme left or anything like that, this is a United States senator who sits as chairman, or sat as chairman up until last year, of the Senate Intelligence Committee on CNN. Says the administration is trying to hide information about 9/11. He says, quote, that's not being done for any legitimate national security reasons. It's being done because they don't want the American people to see a coherent narrative of what happened, end quote. And he suggests there is a Nixonian stench associated with it. So in the meantime, as we ask the question, has this administration harmed our government by lying about weapons of mass destruction? Two different Senate committees want to investigate whether U.S. intelligence accurately pointed to banned weapons in Iraq as claimed by the Bush administration in going to war, according to the Associated Press, a story by Jesse Holland. One member is Senator Bob Graham, who we just quoted. He said, if you don't find these weapons of mass destruction, it will represent a serious intelligence failure or the manipulation of that intelligence to keep the American people in the dark. What did George Bush say? Well, Bush, interviewed in Poland, says, we found the weapons. We found weapons of mass destruction. He says, quote, you remember when Secretary of State Colin Powell stood up in front of the world and he said Iraq has got laboratories, mobile labs to build biological weapons. They're illegal. They're against the United Nations resolutions, and so far we've discovered two. And he goes on to say, for those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them. Interesting. Now, when you look at this story of these mobile labs that were found, these two trailers. First of all, this came out right after the invasion. This came out months ago, these things were found. But they've just kind of recently dusted them off. And the report says that these things could be used to make hydrogen to fill weather balloons, and that's what the Iraqi scientists who've been captured say they were used for. And in fact, there's no trace of banned weapons or even the materials to make banned weapons in them, around them, on them, near them, or anywhere in sight. But there is the material in them necessary to make hydrogen for weather balloons, for the kind of balloons that you use to calibrate your artillery. So were we set up? This is a question that is, I fear, not going to go away, and I am very concerned about the harm this might be doing to the United States. We have these transcripts now. I mean, Tony Blair is just twisting in the wind with regard to this. Transcripts of a private conversation between Jack Straw and Colin Powell, the peers. Jack Straw is their equivalent of Colin Powell, expressing serious doubts about the reliability of intelligence on Iraq's banned weapons program. And they're called the Waldorf transcripts. These guys apparently had a conversation. Perhaps it was at the Waldorf Hotel. And there's a transcript of this conversation, and this transcript is being distributed and circulated among NATO capitals. This according to The Guardian, the British newspaper The Guardian. They say it is being circulated amid a flurry of leaks in Washington about Mr. Powell's concerns about how intelligence was being used to try to persuade reluctant NATO allies, notably France and Germany, to sanction an attack on Iraq. And now we have, and here it gets even, you know, it's like when you step into these things, you just never know where it's going to go. Gulf War Syndrome 2. WorldNetDaily.com. Is there a new Gulf War syndrome linked to this spring's war in Iraq? Four British soldiers have filed suit against the British Ministry of Defense. Tony Flint of the National Gulf Veterans and Families Association, this is a British organization, told the Evening Standard, a British newspaper, quote, we are expecting at least 6,000 new cases as the result of the Iraqi conflict. About 30% of the 22,000 troops who had the anthrax vaccination. They think it's the result of vaccine overload, that these people got all these shots. But also there is concern about exposure to depleted uranium. Could these people be suffering from uranium poisoning? It's very toxic stuff, and it vaporizes when you hit a tank with it. George Tenet defends the Iraqi intelligence. The veteran intelligence professionals for sanity. A group suggests that either weapons are simply not there, or that those eventually will be found will not be in sufficient quantity or capability to support the repeated claim that Iraq posed a grave threat to our country's security. But George Tenet says, no, that wasn't the case. And or does he not? I recall George Tenet, back before we attacked Iraq, saying that if we attacked Iraq, we would create more Osama bin Ladens. Is my recollection of that wrong? I don't think so. You can correct me. Let me know. 1-800-TALK-YES. If George Tenet, the director of Central Intelligence, this is an article from Newsweek, was frustrated for 4 days and nights last winter. Some of the most astute intelligence analysts in the U.S. government sat around his conference room table in his wood-paneled office in Langley, Virginia, trying to prove that Saddam Hussein posed an imminent threat to America. The spooks were not having an easy time of it. Newsweek says the evidence was thin, sketchy, and speculative, or uncorroborated, or just not credible. And yet, based on this, we challenged the doctrine that we and all other nations around the world have followed all these years of not confronting a country militarily unless they have first confronted us. I think it's remarkable that half of Americans think that there were Iraqis involved in 9/11. There's no credible evidence of that at all. One piece of paper has been found suggesting that somebody from Al-Qaeda would like to make a visit to Iraq. That's it. Donald Rumsfeld, in January, says, there is no doubt in my mind that they currently have chemical and biological weapons. Vice President Dick Cheney, we believe Saddam Hussein has nuclear weapons. In March. Where are they? Day 76 of the search. And Tony Blair says he didn't modify this stuff to make it sexier, make the report sexier. And now Jay Rockefeller is getting in on the act. Is this going to be Democrats against the Republicans? Is this going to be the new thing that is going to be, or is this bigger than that? Is this really a national issue? Jay Rockefeller criticized the FBI in his request for an investigation into forged documents used by the Bush administration against Saddam. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we don't get our talking points from right-wing think tanks. Stick around, we'll return in just a few minutes. We've got a conservative alert and some other interesting things to wrap up the hour. Stay tuned.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities, call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The General helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Hey,
and
here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
The Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When the night has come and the land is dark.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, channel 145, available in cars all across America, and streaming live on the Internet at IEAmericaRadio.com. Scott Ritter is the former Marine captain who served as chief of the Concealment Investigations Unit in Iraq for the United Nations Special Commission, UNSCOM, from 1991 to 98. And, Scott, I understand you're on the line with us now.
Yes, yeah. Sorry about before, but I'm here now.
Oh, that's I appreciate that. Unfortunately, we've only got about two and a half minutes here left in the hour, but I would like to reschedule you for another time. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks. Anytime.
Oh, good. A couple of quick questions, though, while we have you on. You are online as saying that, or on the record, as it were, as saying that you think that the Bush administration has disgraced America. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, America is supposed to be a nation of law. We have values and ideals. And when you are a nation of law, that means you have to adhere to the rule of law. We went to war with Iraq in violation of international law, in violation of our undertakings in regards to the United Nations Charter, etc. We claimed that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Indeed, President Bush built an entire case for war around that single issue. I cautioned prior to the war that there was no substantive, factually based information to sustain that allegation, and we better be cautious about heading down the path towards war. We went to war. 171 Americans have died. 1,000 have been wounded or maimed. Tens of thousands of Iraqis have been killed, wounded, or maimed. And it turns out that there are no weapons of mass destruction. That's a disgrace if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. And this is something that you were predicting. Now you also suggested that if we stepped into Iraq, it was a war that we couldn't win. And I know a lot of people on the right are trying to throw that back at you, or waving it around saying, see, Scott Ritter said we couldn't win in Iraq, and we did. I think you have a different take on that.
Well, if they think this is victory, then they've never been in combat. I threw out Vietnam as an analogy because it's one that most Americans can understand. In 1965, right. November, we fought and won the Battle of Ia Drang. 400 Americans died. We killed 2,000 North Vietnamese. We declared victory, and we fought and won many battles after that. But we lost the war, and I think we're going to lose this war in Iraq in the same fashion.
And on it went. Scott Ritter, thank you very much. If you can hang on to the line, Peter Werby is the next talk show host up, and he'd like to speak with you. And thank you very much for being on the program. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Thanks for listening.
listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for our